Good morning. First case this morning is United States against Holbrook. Counsel for the defense, please proceed.
Good morning. Chief Judge Efron, your honors, may it please the court. My name is Lieutenant Colonel Alicia Chambliss, and I represent the appellant in this matter. Mr. Thomas Holbrook decided to join the Coast Guard and met with a recruiter. When the recruiter asked him about his...
Can you do something with the mic, please?
Absolutely. Is this better, sir?
That's better. Thank you.
Mr. Thomas Holbrook decided to join the Coast Guard, and he met with the recruiter. When the recruiter asked him about his illicit drug use, he said that he had used marijuana 20 to 30 times. This was an understatement. He also failed to reveal his use of methamphetamines and the fact that he'd been in drug rehabilitation for approximately 2 months for his use of methamphetamines. At the time that he was with the recruiter, he knew that he was misrepresenting his marijuana use, and he knew that he was concealing his methamphetamine use. However, what he did not know at that time was that this was significant and that this pertained to his qualifications for enlistment. The issue before us today is whether Seaman Holbrook's guilty plea to violating Article 83, fraudulent enlistment, was improvident because the military judge failed to elicit facts sufficient to establish that he knew he lied about a material fact relevant to his qualifications for enlistment. Seaman Holbrook's plea was not proper. First, Seaman Holbrook made some very inconsistent statements during his plea inquiry regarding whether he, in the end, believed his enlistment was actually procured by his false representations or his deliberate concealment. The statute requires that the enlistment was actually procured by these statements or concealments. Appellant's testimony was very strained and very inconsistent regarding even his subsequent understanding of the importance of the information that he withheld. He testified that he thought if he had told the truth, he still would have been enlisted, it might have impacted his enlistment, and he would not have been enlisted. Because this is very conflicting testimony by the appellant in his province inquiry. Second, even if the appellant eventually, at the end of his court-martial, knew and believed that he would not have been enlisted had he told the truth, this is not sufficient. The statute requires that he had contemporaneous knowledge that his false representations or deliberate concealments were regarding his qualifications for enlistment. He did not know that. He believed his drug use was essentially irrelevant. Appellant testified extensively that he did not...
Is that a mistake of fact or mistake of law?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Is that a mistake of fact or mistake of law? If he didn't know what the legal ramifications were of his having these drugs, is that a mistake of fact or mistake of law?
Well, for him, for appellant, I guess it was a mistake of facts, because appellant is not required necessarily to know the law. He just needs to know the factual relevance of what it is that he's saying, the importance of what it is that he's saying. Appellant testified extensively that he did not believe at the time that he was with the recruiter that the truth would have prevented him from enlisting. His understanding of the significance of his drug use came much later, after discussing...
Counsel, is the question whether he knew his lie would prevent him from enlisting, or that it would affect his chances of enlisting?
Well, actually...
And could you speak up a little more, please?
I'm sorry. I'll try to speak up.
Okay.
Try to lower my voice a little. He needed to know, not necessarily that it was an absolute bar to his enlistment, but that it was something at least close to that. It needed to be either an absolute bar to his enlistment or something that would have required a waiver or something of that significance.
So, well, isn't that, are we getting back into Judge Ryan's thing? I mean, that it would require a waiver, isn't that a mistake of law?
Whether the fact is material or has to do with his enlistment.
Well, what I'm asking is what are you maintaining? That he had to know that the lie would bar him from enlisting, or that the lie might have an adverse effect on his chances for enlistment?
It had to be not actually a complete bar, but something very close to it. So I'm actually saying something.
And what's the authority for that? That it had to be something very close to it?
Well, it actually, I guess that's the point where the statute says that the enlistment must be procured by. So the procurement by actually says, in that case, we're looking at this had to be something so significant that if it were, if the recruiter knew the truth, or if the truth had come out, the appellant would not have been able to enlist. So it would
why?
Be a bar.
Why isn't sufficient? Why isn't it sufficient if it is simply a factor which can be taken into account by the government in deciding whether or not to enlist the person? If it affects the discretion of the government at all, why isn't that sufficient under Article 83?
It actually needs to be more than that, and that's because of the fact that it has to actually, the enlistment has to be procured by this information. And so something that merely might have been thought about by the recruiter or had some sort of minor impact is not significant. This is actually almost a but.
Why is it a minor impact if the government, in its discretion, could decide not to enlist someone based upon the information that they provide? For example, in a volunteer force, if the requirement is to, for a particular time, to enlist individuals with certain specialties, and the person lies about their linguistic capabilities, why isn't that sufficient in that case, even though it might not disqualify someone else, and even though the government might decide in its discretion to go ahead and enlist someone who doesn't have linguistic capabilities, if that's what they're looking for at a particular time and that's why they enlisted this person, why isn't that sufficient?
I think that that would be a different situation where the person is not, as you said, not actually disqualified, but they're simply, the service made a decision not to enlist that person, even though they were qualified for enlistment. And as we look at the statute, what...
Well, no one has a right to enlist.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's correct. So what we're looking at here is not necessarily whether the service just makes a decision on particular needs for skill sets or that kind of thing, but actually a disqualifying factor. And then I think what...
But the statute doesn't say that. The statute talks about procuring an enlistment. And if an individual puts down a false statement and the government relies on that statement in exercising its discretion, why isn't that sufficient?
I think, Your Honor, part of the reason that that is not sufficient is because we're actually employing criminal penalties for this. And so we're looking at what kind of knowledge or intent are we requiring a person to have before we want to impose those criminal sanctions.
That's a different question. You're addressing now the question of what the person knew. In response to Judge Stuckey's question, you were addressing what is sufficient to convict someone for the false statement. If an individual knows contemporaneously that the information that they're giving is a lie, and that information is information that the government would use in exercising its discretion as to whether to enlist someone, why isn't that sufficient for a conviction?
I guess, Your Honor, if the military decided that because of that a person is lacking a particular qualification and that being a particular skill set, which was the requirement at the time, then that would mean that perhaps that would be sufficient under this statute.
The government has all these questions on the enlistment form. Aren't most of those questions to assist the government in deciding whether or not to enlist the individual?
Well, Your Honor, some are and some are not, and some are actually disqualifying and some are not. Some of the questions...
Again, you're going to the question of disqualifying.
Yes, Your Honor.
The statute doesn't talk about disqualifying.
Well,
in fact, the manual talks about anything that's material.
Yes, Your Honor, but the statute does talk about qualifications for enlistment. So this is going towards his qualification for enlistment, whether or not a person is actually qualified to be in the service.
Well, and so you're not disagreeing, are you, that the methamphetamine use would be a material fact that the government would consider in determining whether someone was qualified for enlistment?
No, Your Honor, we're not arguing that. This is about whether he needed to know that and whether he needed to know that at the time.
Well, isn't materiality something that ultimately only emerges in retrospect? How can one know at the time whether any particular statement's material in the sense that you're trying to argue?
Well, Your Honor, I think there are lots of ways that a person can know that something is material. And I think that the service actually can take some proactive steps to ensure that people do understand the significance of what they're saying. And again, keeping in mind that we're talking to someone who's a civilian, the recruiter absolutely could say to the person, look, this is the military, this is really important, and drug use is, you know, potentially, depending upon the circumstances, disqualifying. We need to make sure you tell me the truth here. I mean, there are absolutely ways that people can know that because they meet with the recruiter and the recruiter can talk to them about that.
But shouldn't they reflect the truth on all of their responses? I mean, why would they point out that particular one? And doesn't the enlistment form reflect that as well?
Well, yes, Your Honor. I mean, we would certainly hope that people would be honest, and we would absolutely want people to be honest on the forms. And yes, there is something on the enlistment form that does say that, you know, they need to be truthful on it. But again, I think what we're looking at with imposing criminal culpability in a military court for an action that occurred as a civilian, I think we need to be very careful, and presumably Congress wanted to be very careful about when they imposed that criminal culpability. And so they imposed a higher knowledge requirement about someone understanding the significance of what they were doing. Perhaps in some folks who are not military folks may think that the little harmless little lie was a simple little...
Well, we're not talking about a little fib here. We're talking about very substantial lying, you know, very substantial misrepresentation of facts that the government asked for on the form that it was patently obvious the government was going to rely on in deciding whether to enlist this guy.
Well, Your Honor, yes, it was a significant lie. The question is whether the member knew that at the time, whether the civilian, Mr. Holbrook, knew that at the time. And
what does the enlistment form say?
I can read it for you, but the enlistment form,
he knew that he was lying.
Yeah. Absolutely, Your Honor.
Yeah, he knew he was lying, and he knew the government was asking specific information about his drug use, to which he responded with significant misrepresentation. You know, this isn't a question of, I used marijuana twice, and he really used it three times. No, this is a question of substantial drug use, which he basically totally lied about.
Yes, Your Honor. The page, I mean, you're absolutely right. He absolutely lied, and he absolutely knew at the time that he was lying. There's no question about that. And we know that that was a significant lie. He actually had a fair, what he says, he had a reason for believing that it didn't matter. He actually thought it was not important. He had previously been to see an Army recruiter, initially had thought he wanted to join the Army. He revealed everything to the Army recruiter, and the Army recruiter said, sounds good, looks good, you're accepted. And he ended up at the last minute deciding not to enlist with the Army and deciding to join the Coast Guard instead. Went to the Coast Guard recruiter and then did not reveal. In addition, his methamphetamine use, he said he didn't think he was even required to reveal that because it occurred when he was 16 to 17 years of age. So,
is there anything in the record indicating that the recruiter coached him as to what to say?
No, Your Honor, there's nothing in the record that says that.
What specific language in Article 83 are you relying on for your argument that your client, the government had to prove that he knew that it was a material fact that he was misrepresenting or concealing? What language in there would lead us to accept that argument?
Yes, Your Honor. Appellant contends that actually the plain language of the statute is that the word knowingly, actually modifies the phrase qualifications for enlistment. So by knowingly false representation or deliberate concealment as to his qualifications. So opponent contends that knowingly, the word knowingly, and to some extent the word deliberately, are Congress explaining that he needed to understand that this regarded his actual qualification for enlistment.
He knew it was false.
Yes, Your Honor.
He knew it was false.
Yes,
knowingly false representation or deliberate concealment as to his qualifications for the enlistment. The form makes it clear that drug use is a consideration in enlistment. He knowingly made a false representation. What more is required by the plain language of the statute?
Well, Your Honor, I think the form certainly showed that, you know, he did say that he did use drug use. That was on the form, but then, you know, misrepresented how much. But if you look at his testimony, yes, he signed the form saying, hey, this is important, but his testimony is that he did not understand, and he was very consistent in his testimony that at the time he met with the recruiter, he did not understand the significance of this and really did not think that it mattered.
Counsel, what about page 37 of the record? I thought, this is after he had an opportunity to consult with counsel. I thought if I would have told him the truth about everything, it may have had an effect on my enlistment. Why isn't that sufficient to meet the materiality standard in Article 83?
Yes, Your Honor. Actually, he said lots of different things during his testimony.
Was your answer to my question, yes, that would have been sufficient, or yes, you're glad to be here today?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I'm very glad to be here today. I think, and you may need to restate the question, I apologize.
My question is on page 37, where he said, I thought if I had told him the truth about everything, it may have had an effect on my enlistment. Why isn't that sufficient to meet the materiality standard of Article 83, as set forth in the manual?
Well, Your Honor, first of all, it's because he made other inconsistent statements. And so,
but this was in response, this was after the other inconsistent statements, after the military judge was trying to clarify on the record what exactly he was pleading guilty to.
Yes, Your Honor, and subsequent to that, later in the record, he actually, again, the military judge clarified, so let me make sure I understand this, at the time you were with the recruiter, you did not understand that this was important, but now you do. Today you understand. Yes, Your Honor. So even after that page 37, there were some statements that, first of all, made it clear that he was still maintaining that he would not know at the time that he was with the recruiter.
But this goes back to my initial question to you, which is the fact that he is mistaken about the legal effect of a particular fact that he's lying about, that's a mistake of law.
Well, Your Honor, he doesn't have to act. A plea is not contending that he actually has to know and understand the law. Certainly, we would not say that the mistake of law is a defense, of course. But he does factually have to understand the significance and importance of what it is that he's saying. So he has to understand that the significance of what he's saying is that this is about whether or not he's qualified to be enlisting. And he, at least at the time he met with the recruiter, did not understand that. So that is actually just a mistake of fact on the part of the appellant, and is why he didn't meet the requirements of the statute.
You'll have an opportunity on rebuttal. Counsel for the government.
May it please the court. I'm Lieutenant Commander Patrick Freeman. I represent the United States. The plain language of Article 83 only imposes a requirement that an accused knowingly make a false representation. There is no requirement in the statute, nor can one reasonably be read into it, that requires the accused have knowledge of the full impact of a truthful statement or revealing the actual facts.
So it's the government's view that on his enlistment form, paragraph 11, in religious preference, instead of placing none, if he had listed a specific religion, and later on in the course of banter on board the ship, he said, yeah, I don't have any religion, but I put one down there because I was kind of embarrassed about it. They could then prosecute him under Article 83.
If, in fact, his enlistment was procured because of that false statement, I mean, obviously there's other constitutional implications with making enlistment.
Right, but if this enlistment wasn't procured because of that, and he knew at the time that it was a lie that he put it down there,
then it wouldn't be a violation of Article 83. It would have been a lie. However, that lie was not the method by which he put it in his enlistment. So if somebody lies about something that does not, in fact, result in their enlistment, then that wouldn't be a violation of Article 83.
So that would be if they lie about a fact that doesn't go to the qualification for enlistment. Those are the types of lies that would not be prosecuted under 83.
Yes.
And it's the government's view that if a person lies about a fact that is a qualification for the person, that is a qualification for enlistment, and the individual does not know, and reasonably does not know, that it is a qualification for enlistment, honestly doesn't know that it's a qualification for the enlistment, if the person honestly does not know that it's a qualification for enlistment, then they can still be prosecuted for false enlistment.
That is the government's position, that the accused does not need to know the fact that their enlistment is being procured by the false statement. They only need to know that they're making the false statement. However, in this case, the appellant clearly knew of the material of his false statements and his omissions about his drug use. However, in the hypothetical where somebody reasonably did not know, the government's position is they would still be in violation.
And is there a case that stands for that proposition?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay, so that's established in the case law. Thank you.
Actually, Your Honor, if there are no further questions.
Well, one question that I have suggested by the appellant's argument in this case is that he said, as we've discussed on page 37, I thought if I told him the truth about everything, it may have had an effect on enlistment. Let's assume that that's sufficient under Article 83 to show that he had contemporaneous knowledge at the time that the drug use would have an effect on the enlistment. What was the military judge doing after that? The military judge said, I'm not really convinced that you think your enlistment was obtained because of these false statements. That's what he said on page 41. What are we to make of the person in the room was listening to the individual during the Providence inquiry and appears not to be convinced that there's a Provident play? Is it, what do we do when we have a situation in which the judge who's there is taking a different view than we may take looking at the cold record?
Your Honor, obviously at that particular time the judge did have some question about the providency of the plea. But the fact that after he cleared up the issue, he went on to find his plea provident is an indication that that person who was sitting there in the room was eventually convinced of the providence of the plea.
That's only if we accept your view that it's irrelevant whether the person knows that the information is material to his enlistment at the time that he provides the statement. If that's not the case, if we read the manual saying the person has to know that it's material at the time that they make the false statement, which is typical in a false statement prosecution, then we have the military judge taking a different view afterwards. The military judge is saying, it appears to me that you didn't know that the information was material to your enlistment at the time, and now you do know. So that's okay with me.
Well, I think, Your Honor, when you read it in context, the military judge is talking about whether or not the appellant knew at the time that he would not have been allowed to enlist. And the appellant's quite clear, eventually, that he did not think this would be a bar to his enlistment, but he did think that it was something that would be considered by the recruiter. So I think that what the military judge was clearing up was when he came to the knowledge that being honest about his past drug use would have prohibited him from enlisting. And he told the military judge, he found out later.
So you view the subsequent information as clearing up a different aspect of the question rather than addressing his contemporaneous knowledge?
Yes, Your Honor, because I think that the question the military judge was trying to clarify was if he in fact believed that the false representations were what procured his enlistment, because obviously that's necessary for provident plea. He just has to believe that.
I understand. I don't have any further questions on that. Thank you, counsel. Does the defense have rebuttal?
If I may just conclude, Your Honor. In conclusion, Article 83 must be read to give each word its full force and meaning, and in a way that supports public policy goals. Residual ambiguity must be resolved in favor of appellant, which would mean resolving in favor of requiring a higher level of knowledge and reading the word knowingly to apply to qualifications for enlistment. Senior Lieberg's testimony was not only inconsistent, it was actually contradictory regarding whether he believed his drug use would have precluded service in the Coast Guard. This alone makes his plea improvident. In addition, he testified consistently that at the time that he met with the recruiter, he did not believe his drug use was of any consequence to his ability to enlist. The painful and convoluted plea inquiry, which required several breaks for consultation with counsel and eventually even defense counsel speaking for him, constituted a vain attempt to save the plea. Appellant did not know that he was misrepresenting or concealing information regarding his qualification for enlistment, and his plea was therefore improvident. And the military judge acknowledged that Seaman Holbrook did not know at the time he was speaking to the recruiter that the truthful answers would have prevented his enlistment. This was a fatal flaw. Because his plea was improvident, Seaman Holbrook requested the findings on charge one under Article 83 be set aside and his sentence reassessed. And if there are no further questions.
Thank you, counsel. We thank counsel for both parties for your presentation today. The court will stand in recess until 9:35 a.m.
The court stands in recess until 9:35.